Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Let's go there.
With Shira and Ryan.
Oh my God. Entertainment.
Music. Pop culture.
LGBT plus news. Let's go there.
Start now.
It's Tuesday. What's going on? Getting you into the week. Hope you're having a great one.
Yes.
We got the giggles in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got a big show coming up. We've got what's trending in the news. Top of the hour. It's Hear Me Out Tuesdays. I remember we have a listener that calls me out on my pronunciation of Tuesdays.
Yes, because it does sound like you're chewing your Tuesday.
Yeah, well, it's Hear Me Out Tuesdays. Take it or leave it. And we've got our favorite therapist here to talk about age gaps and relationships.
And also going back to that listener that obviously listens to us, I'm happy that they hit me up instead of like hitting you up about it. Like,
why?
I need to let Ryan know. And so Ryan can tell him and tell her in like the Ryan way.
Okay, which is what way?
Which is like, I don't know.
Like, I'm open to hearing constructive criticism, just saying. Or maybe not. Okay, that got awkward. Don't tell me anything. I'm perfect.
Oh, it's funny. It's funny.
So, yeah, we're all getting energized today, caffeinated for the show.
Well, APLA was today. We did a great luncheon. It's an organization that is in charge of the AIDS Walk here in Los Angeles.
Happy you mentioned that. It is such a great organization.
And they're also learned so much about the organization. They had an amazing luncheon. Thanks for inviting us and just the people Channel Q as well. And we got to really find out about what they're doing for people of color and marginalized communities. And it was just beautiful to be able to just, you know, lunch with everyone.
Yeah, and hear what they're doing. And you can get medical support there without being part of the community, by the way. And you don't need to have HIV or AIDS to also get a medical help there, which is amazing because a lot of people don't have health care.
Yeah, it's absolutely kind of amazing because they're opening up a new, which how many times are we going to say amazing? We're opening up.
It's amazing.
They're opening up a new campus and they showed us video and photos of it and it looked beautiful, and they just really encourage us to, like, especially around the AIDS Walk, when it's time for the AIDS Walk
it's
in October 20th, we want to form a group we're going to do it all together, like a Channel Q family group. So, super excited. If you want to know more about APLA, just, like, check out their website, Google it. That's what Google's for.
APLA.
Yeah, APLA. And it's just exciting. I love that organization.
Yeah. All right, let's get into what's trending in the news. Top of the hour, every hour, right here on Let's Go There. President Trump today said that a deal with China will happen, quote, when the time is right.
Which is never.
Right? This is very vague. And only after the U.S. is allowed to make up a ground, he says, was lost after the formation of the World Trade Organization. I mean, you're talking about WTO, like something that was built a while back. So China, like...
What's WTO?
World Trade Organization.
Oh, I don't know why I thought you were like saying like WTF.
Yeah. WTF.
I mean, what's WTO?
The crazy thing is you could say that and people would be like, oh,
no,
yeah.
I thought you had invented like a new phrase. I was like, what does that mean?
So it was founded in 1995. So, it's a group that wants to regulate international trade between nations. And to say that, you know, we're going to change things since it was started. I mean, that's going to take a lot to untangle that. He tweeted, my respect and friendship with the president is unlimited, but as I've told him many times before, this must be a great deal for the U.S., or it just doesn't make sense. We have to be allowed to make some of the tremendous ground we have lost. It will all happen much faster than people think. And he is, of course, responding to fears that a trade war with China could hurt American farmers. And Trump said this, that they would be, in fact, the biggest beneficiaries of what is happening now.
What, that farmers would?
Yeah. I feel, once again, touting something that doesn't make sense and possibly doesn't have any data around it or hasn't been proven.
Well,
so.
I think he's like the person that sits in the burning kitchen and just is like, no, everything's fine. And there's a fire surrounding
yeah,
him.
Right.
No, I swear, everything is okay. I don't know. But honestly, I just want this to be over and done with.
Well, yeah, he's meeting with the premier of China during the G20 summit in Osaka, Japan at the end of June. So hopefully we'll have some progress there. Now, just days before a vote is expected on the Equality Act. A senior administration official confirmed that Donald Trump does not support the legislation that would amend federal law to provide a wide range of protections against discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity.
You don't say.
Yeah. So this comes from his office. The Trump administration absolutely opposes discrimination of any kind and supports the equal treatment of all. Great. However, this bill in its current form is filled with poison pills that threaten to undermine parental and conscience rights. While Trump has yet to speak publicly about opposition to the Equality Act, it is expected that the White House will issue a statement of administration policy when the legislation comes to the floor later this week. Now, are you into candidates making a statement by being selective in who they speak to from the media? Do you think that's important?
I do, especially in 2020 elections. I think you have to be willing to go outside of your comfort zone.
Right, yeah.
But I depending on what the where you're trying to go and if you actually feel like where you're going isn't beneficial to the bigger picture or beneficial to certain people that aren't willing to listen or see other sides, then I don't think you should.
All right. Well, Elizabeth Warren has refused to go on Fox for a town hall. And so the question is, wouldn't that have been maybe a good opportunity to show the other side, you know, Republicans, what she is offering? Or is it good that she refused them? We'll be diving into that right after this. You're listening to Let's Go There with Sharon Ryan on the new Channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
Elizabeth Warren turned down a Fox News invite for a televised town hall and basically said that she did not like the cable network, not surprisingly. But she said that they were a hate-for-profit racket that gives a megaphone to racists and conspiracists. And she doesn't want to be part of it. She doesn't want to have anything, you know, of that. And so she said no. Meanwhile, there are a few other Democrats, including Bernie Sanders and Amy Klobuchar, who have already done, you know, events. Pete Buttigieg and Kirsten Gillibrand are scheduled to as well. All of them have criticized the network's coverage of the Trump administration, but defended going on the network as a means to reach voters. So the question is, did Elizabeth Warren do the right thing?
I think, in all honesty, and as speaking as where I stand on the political, like a political side,
yeah,
I think she did the right thing, in my opinion, but I do think it's going to hurt her. I think my personal choice would have been, yeah, girl, do not go on Fox News because, yeah, that is going to fuel, you know, fuel them to get all these views off of, you know, ideas that you're spurting that they don't even support, and it doesn't really make
sense.
They're
going to take things out of context.
Yeah, and they will just spin it the way they want to spin it. But when I'm thinking of, like, what's critical for the 2020 elections, I don't know if it was a good idea. I think what a sure candidate is going to need and have when trying to beat a person like Donald Trump is they're going to need a good amount of, you know, conservative Republicans, and they're going to need a great amount of Democrats or liberals or whatever, you know, people that fall in the lines of that. And I think to kind of exclude certain voices and certain point of views is a terrible idea, because that is, if we think about Hillary Clinton, that's exactly what she did. She excluded several states that she was like, oh, I don't need to go to those states.
Yeah, he's got that covered. I'm going to make a statement by now.
Well, it's not even he's got that covered, but it was like, I don't need to touch that because it's automatically going, they're going to be in my favor. Because they were so confident that Donald Trump would not even win. And so it was like, oh, I'll just do the states that I want to do, and I'll do these appearances, and I'll, you know, dance with the cool kids and act like I got hot sauce in my bag and win Formation and Beyonce has my support and all these things. But that showed that, guess what, you're relying on things without, you know, and excluding voices, no matter how stupid or how, like, what your point of view is, like, when it comes to, I guess, people that are conservative, it's one of those things where you can't exclude their voices because that's going to make them automatically give, all right, well, if you're not going to hear from me, if you're not going to even give me a chance to hear your ideas, then automatic. You're out of my mind. I'm voting for Trump again.
It adds a lot of fuel to the fire, right? It does separate her from the other contenders, but is it the right thing? She had said that her going on Fox News would give them credibility and boost their revenue. In a Twitter thread, she posted, "A Fox News town hall adds money to the hate-for-profit machine, to which I say hard pass. Fox News is welcome to come to my events, just like any other outlet." And even, you know, her team noted that since January, she's done 17 town halls in 17 states, had 57 media availabilities with reporters, and she's done 131 interviews.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing in that is, in March, the DNC actually announced that it would not allow the network to host any of the Fox News network. It would not allow Fox News to host any of the Democratic debates leading up to 2020 election. And also recent reporting in The New Yorker said the inappropriate relationship between, you know, President Trump and his administration and Fox News has led me to conclude that the network is not in a position to host a fair and neutral debate for our candidates. And that was from the DNC chairman, Tom Perez, who said in the statement, "Therefore, Fox News will not serve as a media partner for the 2020 Democratic primary debates." And when that decision happened and became kind of news and headlines, I even thought, I was like, that is a terrible idea. I understand not fueling, especially like a network like Fox News, where you have, you know, these people on there that are supposed to be news anchors or journalists, but instead it's turned into kind of opinion propaganda television.
Yeah.
I get that, where you don't want to fuel their advertisers, you don't want to give them ratings and all these things, but think about it from the bigger picture. It's like, we should not be excluding any voices whatsoever. And I mean, to be quite honest, that's the whole reason why Donald Trump succeeded, is because
he spoke
to those people. He spoke directly to them and figured out these are how these people are thinking, no matter how my past views were. Because let's be very real, Donald Trump was not a Republican. If you look at old clips, he was very kind of like Democratic, like a moderate Democrat.
Yeah, he's hanging out and partying with all those people.
But he had very Democratic views. Yeah. And so it really showed that he switched it. He flipped it because he saw that there was a huge group of people that Democrats were like, oh, we don't really care about them.
He's a business person. He found his consumer.
They're country bumpkins. Yep. And I don't have to deal with them. And that's where I feel like if we continue to do that, we're going to mess up. And I think the next Democrat actually to appear on Fox News is going to be Pete Buttigieg.
And listen, if he can do it, anyone should be able to
do it. Because he's participating in a town hall on Sunday in Claremont, New Hampshire. And I'm interested because his spokesperson for the team said, Pete's been clear throughout this campaign that he plans to meet voters where they are. And Pete actually is getting a great response from conservatives as well, because they're really interested in his military background and that he was a mayor.
Yeah.
So he's being smart about this, where he's really kind of, you know, being that middle ground person. It's kind of like a Joe Biden.
And
he's understanding the game.
He's much younger Joe Biden.
I mean, he's understanding.
Yeah, and he's also not scared to have conversations where those people are. And he's like, yeah, you want to step it up in front of me? I'll step it up in front of you, it seems. It seems like Elizabeth Warren is going even further left compared to a lot of these people. And you would think that even a Bernie Sanders, we know how progressive he is, but in recent months, Elizabeth Warren has gone to the left, you know, on her rivals, you know, coming out about impeaching Trump for giving student debt,
which I love. I talk so much crap about Elizabeth Warren, but honestly, she's turning out to be that girl.
She's speaking
and
up.
It's one of those things where we are seeing a lot of action from her that we're not seeing from any other candidate.
Yeah.
That is actually willing to call out things no matter how rocky she feels about it. She's coming out and she's being smart about
it. It's specific. It's concrete. Actually showing plans. It's great to see. She talked also about breaking up big tech companies like Facebook and Amazon, abolishing the Senate filibuster. Great. It also is very divisive, right? And so it could be those things. While we want to see real things done and we want to see someone take an actual stand.
Well, I think the good thing about Elizabeth is she's going to have a really good moment of garnishing because how outspoken she's being. I think she's really getting a lot of attention for Democrats. I think she's understanding, all right, so if I'm going to stand in kind of this, I'm going to cut out the other side, I need to come in strong with a whole lot of Democratic support.
So you know what I stand for in my brand.
I do like this one thing that Bernie Sanders, because of course, like you said earlier, he has been on Fox News and he's done town halls. He said recently that he said, I think it's important to talk to Trump supporters and explain to them what degree he has betrayed the working class of this country and lied during his campaign. Now, I think Bernie Sanders is, of course, that kind of person to do that because before he was a Democrat and running in a Democratic race, he was an independent. So he doesn't really lie on Democratic, you know, on one side or the other. He kind of has the opportunity and kind of the bandwidth to go on a Fox News and be able to do that. But I think Elizabeth Warren, if she stays strong in her stance and stays strong with what she's doing, I think she's going to succeed like astronomically.
Okay, well, with that said, then it makes sense that she's not on Fox News.
Yeah, it could work.
She's separating herself again from
the
rest. I
don't think anyone else can do that, though. I don't know.
At this point, then it feels like they're just following her footsteps.
Yeah, I don't think anyone is as strong as her right now, in my opinion.
Once again, where is Cory Booker?
Girl.
Where has he been?
He in a relationship.
He's in love with, what's her name, with Rosario Dawson?
Yeah, so I'm like, I don't know what he's doing.
What about
at this
Beto?
Beto is just now, so a lot of these candidates, especially the ones that came out very kind of like, oh, these are your top candidates, a lot of them have been kind of playing that hard to get, where they're like deciding which outlets they want to do, what they want to do, instead of being like a Pete Buttigieg or Elizabeth Warren and literally going everywhere.
They're going wide.
And I think there's like over like 22 candidates at this point. Yeah, one came, like an extra one came out today. I think it's important at this point, even though it's still very early, to switch gears and being like, okay, well, I need to put myself out there before you're forgotten. And if you're not saved, Kamala's like, she's...
Oh, yeah,
she's
Kamala, I forgot about her.
But Kamala's had to kind of rebrand. She's kind of reset everything, and she's like now coming back into the picture. But I think right now, if you're not a Pete Buttigieg, if you're not Elizabeth Warren, if you're obviously not a Biden... I don't know.
It
what
might
you're doing.
Be. I think it's the three of them: Pete, Joe, versus Elizabeth. There you go. Those are the three contenders.
I mean,
can it be three?
I don't want Sanders anywhere near this race, to be honest. I really don't even want Biden anywhere near this race.
All right. Well, that was somewhat trending in the news. More to come. Top of the hour, right here on Let's Go There. We are moving into our top stories in pop culture and entertainment. What's the tea?
Okay, so coming up in 7 minutes, there is a huge feud that I guess went on between Wendy Williams and Radio Legend Howard Stern, and we have the clip that we're going to be playing of them going back and forth. It's insane. Stay tuned. Don't you touch that radio dial. You're listening to Let's Go There with Sheeran Ryan on the new Channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
All right, so we are coming back into What's the Tea, our pop culture entertainment stories of the day. And let's talk about Wendy Williams and Howard Stern. So I guess they've patched things up, maybe? I don't know. Well, they had a public spat back in March when Wendy Williams commented on her daytime talk show, The Wendy Williams Show, about how Howard Stern had gone so Hollywood when discussing his new book, Howard Stern Comes Again. Here's a clip.
He's a Hollywood insider now, which sucks. You started, like me, being of the people, but at some point you sat behind that microphone for too long and now you are the people.
You're not a nice person. Nobody likes you. That's why you can't go Hollywood. Just shut up. Keep your opinion to yourself about me. I have struggled my entire life through thick and thin to get out there and do something that actually means something to people. You're not the queen of all media. You haven't earned that title. You haven't done anything.
I will say what's on my mind, and sometimes that will rub people the wrong way. Is, you know, that's my whole career.
At one point, he was just, you know, my everything.
Oh.
So basically, you know, he obviously took some jabs at her appearance and and her health issues, saying, "F you and your dumb show and your mysterious illness." She disappears for 2 months. Nobody knows why. And now she's questioning me. Thanks, honey. I never fainted on my show either. Mm. But in a new interview with The Hollywood Reporter, he's actually saying he's regretting his comments so much that he's removed the rant from future airings of the episode. He said, "That was me at my worst."
Like his rant that he does on his episodes.
Right, yeah.
Which is a big part of his brand.
Because that's what I thought. I felt like he's very outspoken and he just goes really in.
Yeah, I mean, that's always been. It seems like he's going through some sort of a life shift right now.
Yeah,
he had a cancer scare maybe, or like he had some sort of sickness scare. He has his new book out. It seems like he's really coming out and he's talking about, I know recently I heard he meditates, and it seems like he's going through some sort of personal growth awareness journey. And then he just doesn't want to be such a hater anymore, even though that was who he always was.
Because he even said, he's like, I think it may have maybe have been just a miscommunication, because he says, I thought she was saying that I was a piece of crap and I sucked, but as I hear it now, I don't see it as offensive at all. If Hollywood means that I've evolved in some way and the show has changed, then yes, she hit the nail on the head. And I guess it's one of those things where when you really admire someone that you kind of work in the same industry with and you guys known of each other, and then one person kind of critiques you or gives their like opinion on you and it's not probably what you want to hear, does it hit harder than an outside person?
Yeah, because I think she is. They're both people that started in radio, right? And that had really successful careers in radio. And I think that, yeah, if you respect someone or if you've known them for a long time and they decide to suddenly take a jab at you, totally it hurts
right.
more. Yeah.
Well, she even she later addressed Stern's comment on her talk show and said that she admits that his insults deeply kind of affected her because of how much she admired him. She says, by the way, Howard, I read the article with you on the cover of the Hollywood Reporter, and I saw that you mentioned me and that you apologized. She said, Howard, you know what? If you never apologized to me ever in your life, you would still be one of the most influential people in shaping my career. You and Oprah. That's it.
Whoa.
Which is nice, I guess. That's really
Oprah
sweet.
Oprah and Stern on the same level.
But I guess I'd never, because I always forget that Wendy had such a long career in radio before.
Yeah.
And so it's one of those things where I guess, yeah, before she even thought that she would be like kind of conquering daytime television, she would be, you know, Howard was probably who she wanted to be.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, both of them have been controversial. Both of them are very outspoken. So they're actually, I think, more similar than they think in a way.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And so usually it's the people that are more similar than you think that trigger you the most.
Well, honey, I don't know. I don't know if I would ever like basically fight with my career idol in some way, because that's her career idol. I guess she really looks up to him. So, but I think I'm glad they squashed it.
But
because
they're both easy to make fun of, to be honest. Like, hello,
true.
Get with it, right?
True.
Self awareness.
Well, coming up in What's the Tea, we have so much more. Kelly Ripa is ripping The Bachelorette, and honey, she has some strong opinions. Stay tuned for that, because that's coming up in 6 minutes. You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
All right, so let's get back into What's the Tea, pop culture entertainment stories of the day. Okay, so this one's about Kelly Ripa. So Kelly and Ryan, of course, is like an awesome daytime show on ABC, right?
They're a duo.
I've never heard of it before this. It's very new to me. No, I'm just joking. Of course.
Being sarcastic.
Duh. Producer Vanessa doesn't get
sarcastic Tuesdays.
Well, Kelly Ripa is not a fan of The Bachelorette and did not let the fact that she shares a network with the reality series stop her from trashing it. So she says this. She says, you guys know how I feel about the show. It disgusts me.
I appreciate that statement because I'm not... I've never gotten into the Bachelorette thing, like ever. And so many people around me are obsessed with it. And it is kind of a strange thing of like, oh, a bunch of people just like vying for your attention and romance. And it's like kind of perpetuates really superficial fake relationships.
It does. She went on to kind of say, and she said that actually after Ryan Seacrest announced that the current Bachelorette, Hannah Brown, is going to be visiting the show this week.
I mean, that's a bit rude then. Yeah. I mean, you could say you don't like it, but like, hey, I'll have someone on as a guest.
Well, she went on to say, I couldn't stand the idea of 25 exceptional women fighting over one ordinary fella, in my opinion. She just does not like it. She says, we are too special to be arguing over a guy.
Yes, girl. I love Kelly Ripa. And you know what? Ryan Seacrest probably has the hots for one of the chicks. Like, he loves blondes. I'm sorry. He's just known.
Every time we,
is he dating someone else?
I don't know if he's dating someone. Every time I think about Ryan Seacrest and like him dating women, there's that Britney Spears interview where it was like, Will.i.am. It was Ryan Seacrest, and Ryan says something about him liking women, and she like literally looks at the camera. She's like, "What, women?" I had no clue.
Oh, no.
And it's like hilarious because I think not only was Britney, but everyone was discovering Ryan Seacrest's sexuality in that moment. I agree with her to an extent, but I think I watched one season of Bachelorette when it was the Black Bachelorette, Rachel, and I was like, even though she made a terrible decision at the end, I thought it was actually very juicy to kind of stay involved with these like men in character, and then just to imagine the amount of like saliva that everyone was sharing. It was just really gross.
Yeah, do people get sick on that show?
But honestly, nothing tops like, you know, Flavor of Love and like, you know, I Love New York, like VH1. Like, that's how you do a series of like The Bachelor, Bachelorette, and all that stuff. I think this Bachelorette and The Bachelor is like meant for like white people, and then like Flavor of Love and I Love New York was like meant for like everyone else.
You know what? Like, those shows are very entertaining. If you've seen Unreal, it's like a scripted version of what happens.
Yeah.
It's that, I find that fascinating. But the fact that, I don't know. Although I would totally be the Bachelorette. Like, I would love a bunch of guys to vie for me.
Even though she just said she hated it too.
I mean, I you know what? I'm more into, this is a bit sexist, like, yeah, all the men vying for one woman. Yes, go her. All the women vying for one man? Nah. Not as interesting.
Well, I mean, I don't think I would ever do it. I just, that's just...
No?
Because I like to be by myself, and that's just a lot of time to spend with other people.
That's true. I'm not good at being... I would never play the game right.
Yeah, and then you gotta go home and meet their parents. Like, that's
well,
so
that
gross.
I'm fine with. Parents do like me.
Yeah.
Until I bring up, like, possibly having a poly or open relationship. No. I could be that outside-the-box progressive hippie on The Bachelor,
yeah.
Right?
Well, I don't know. Let us know your thoughts on our social media. We are Channel Q, and keep listening on that radio.com app.
So coming up in 8 minutes, how to have tough conversations around consent, privilege, toxic masculinity to create safe spaces for everyone. You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
It's Mental Health Awareness Month, and we are featuring conversations with doctors, psychologists, people that are in the field, and discussing the issues that we care about. One issue that we talk about a lot here on Let's Go There, and even on Channel Q, is toxic masculinity.
Oh, honey, I hear the straight men screaming.
Right? So today we've got Dr. Milo Dodson joining us, who is a psychologist, to talk more about this. Welcome back to the show.
Man, thank you so much for having me. And full transparency, thank you for sharing that comment about the straight men screaming, because I think as a cis straight man,
yeah,
I think a lot of the conversations I have are based in heterosexism and homophobia. Mm-hmm. And I think I really, really take ownership of my privilege,
yeah,
and being able to recognize that when I have conversations, mm-hmm, and just really encouraging more of those conversations.
No, and I think that's beautiful, because one, I could kind of consider you a unicorn, because just so awesome and so accepting, and look, the way I see you and, you know, obvious disclosure, our sister station, Amp Radio, you're your CRTs.
You're her partner.
Partner, yes, and yes. And I think it's one of those things where we, here on Channel Q, we're all about giving everyone a voice, but I think talking about toxic masculinity, especially directed towards cis hetero people,
right,
and men, it can be uncomfortable.
Mm. Yeah.
And I think it's something that we have to kind of take that blanket away and just like, let's have a real conversation here.
Yeah, and I think a lot of times the uncomfort or the discomfort is grounded in a fear or an anxiety. Mm. I can share, for me as a kid, I was always told, don't cry. Oh, that's gay.
Yeah.
And there's this equating expression and your sexuality. And to somehow say, like, if you're crying, then you're less than. And then, so if you're not straight, then you're less than.
Right.
And so somehow those become equal. And, you know, clearly as like an 11, 12-year-old, I didn't have the language. Mm-hmm. But when I went to undergrad and went to grad school, it was like, oh, that's what it was. That's why I felt like this wasn't really sitting with my spirit.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And now toxic masculinity is something that a lot of people say. Do you feel like it's just a buzz term? And how do you get through that? You know, when people bring it up on the other side, like, oh, here it goes again, you're bringing this up.
Yeah, I think people will have that type of reaction when they don't really understand what it is and what it isn't. So masculinity in itself can be helpful in terms of giving folks resilience, giving folks tenacity and perseverance to push through. And at the same time, toxic masculinity comes into the picture when we really suppress emotion, when there's the expectation that I can't express myself because somehow I'm less than or I'm going to be weak. And as a man, again, the toxic masculinity part, I have to win at all costs. Mm-hmm. And so if I start to express myself, then somehow I'm losing. And to feel is failure for a lot of folks.
Wow. I mean, that's actually super powerful. That
feel is failure.
Yeah, that you said that. Because, okay, so this conversation, one, is obviously a huge conversation happening in culture. But specifically for us, there was an article on Playboy.com that the headline read, "Why She Can't Just Say No or the Danger of Male Rejection."
Yes.
And not only I feel like that does that belong to cis hetero women, but that also belongs to trans women as well, because a lot of times trans women are at they fear for their lives, or they do die due to cis hetero men feeling closeted or don't wanting to, they feel gay or whatever emotions are navigating through.
That's right.
And so I wanted to talk a little bit more about that, because I think, one, what is the conversation of like Me Too and all these things where I feel like now we've lost, people say we lost affection, where it's like we can't be too affectionate.
Yeah. Yeah,
so
yeah.
What's the line between being healthy and being toxic?
Well, from the jump, let's say this: consent is sexy.
Yeah.
And so if you're confused for a lot of people, that's probably because you haven't really asked. So consent is an affirmative type thing where you actually have to gain consent and not just assume that a person's giving you consent.
Yeah, it needs to be clear. It's not just body language. Well, you mean body language.
Well, but that's the thing, because that happened to Aziz Ansari, where there was like a nonverbal body language where the girl was like, I did not want this, but she never left his apartment, and she kind of continued to go on with it. And he was like, well, I thought everything was fine.
Right.
And I feel like a lot of times that is the case in some of these moments where there is the quote-unquote good guy, where they're also trying to navigate this era of like, well, am I making a mistake? Do I try? Yeah.
And to be clear, I know that as a straight cis man, I'm in a system of privilege, and so I benefit from that type of system and different discussions that I can opt out of at times.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we're talking about Aziz or folks who are considered to be the good guys, one, knowing that you're in a system of oppression at times, and then two, to say, well, I thought she was okay with it, is kind of showing there was a gap there. And so instead of thinking that she would be okay with it, being able to be really intentional and asking. And so that's why I'm talking about consent being affirmative and something that you earn instead of just get assumed that way.
And yeah, what is it about, I guess, the dynamic? And I know we talk about, obviously, gender fluidity, but this is a very sometimes male-female discussion.
Mm.
And why is this an important thing to talk about right now?
Mm-hmm.
And how does it affect mental health?
Oh, I mean, it's everything. To be clear, again, gender fluidity, we know gender is not binary. It's not just men or women. And being able to...
Gender is a concept.
Yes, and a construct, exactly. Yeah. And so as we're talking about mental health, knowing that for some folks, there's the equating of, if I'm going to express myself with one gender in one way, or maybe changing gender at times, also knowing that I'm not going to feel safe in some spaces. And so the intersection of race and gender, like you were talking about, trans-identified women, particularly trans-identified women of color, and how there's so many spaces that aren't safe, like straight up. And so being able to myself use that privilege to speak to instances of oppression and you know, transphobia, and really have those difficult conversations like we were talking
about. Well, how do you, I guess, how do you lead that conversation without, you know, because it is such a touchy like moment, and you have to be real about human emotions. We're all human. We're all going to feel uncomfortable.
That's right.
Whether it's race, whether it's this, it's all these things.
Yeah.
How do you have that conversation and lead in a way of coming from empathy and understanding, like, okay, I'm not going to just let you do anything, but I am going to hold you accountable because of your privilege.
Yeah, for sure. And I think for me, I go to the research on this, and there's a concept called cultural humility. So when you're having conversations with folks, it's about being able to say, look, this is who I am based off of my expressed and my cultural backgrounds, my identities. Let me first seek to understand that way. Let me actually really listen. And so when we're having difficult dialogues, it's more about listening and showing empathy and validating someone's concerns.
Yeah.
Instead of just trying to say, well, this is what I think it is, and this is what I think it isn't, and you ain't this and you ain't that. And that's not helpful.
Or like, and I'm not going to name people, but I know some people that they'll be like, oh yeah, you're just saying what everyone's saying, putting a blanket statement on me as a white cis hetero male.
Yeah. Mm.
And I feel like this cultural humility concept just blew my mind. Like, I'm going to bring it up in argument. Not arguments, conversations.
Yeah. Debates.
But I think that's not to say that there's not additional space for folks to also own their privilege. So as we're talking about white folks being able to own their privilege, and you know, we hear at the time, well, I didn't own slaves. My parents didn't own slaves.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, dude, we know that. But also being clear, like, you're in a system that benefits and helps you in that privilege. And not just talking about racial privilege, but gender privilege as well.
Well, you know, conversations like this, one, obviously they're hard to have in hetero like spaces, but they're also harder to have in hetero of color spaces as well. Like, being an African American male, queer male, it was way harder. I think it's still difficult for a person like my mother to understand something like this because she has an idea of what a strong black man is supposed to be, quote unquote.
And that expectation can feel limiting at times,
right?
And that expectation can have that negative impact on our mental health at times. So being able to try to reframe those expectations to have clear, consistent conversations.
Psychologist Dr. Milo Dodson continues to join us in 7 minutes after this. So we will be continuing our conversation on privilege, toxic masculinity, and creating safe spaces where we can all have a conversation. You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
Dr. Milo Dodson joins us again as we discuss toxic masculinity and just dynamics to create more safe spaces.
I mean, doing a phenomenal job.
Yes. Oh. Dropping the concepts.
Thanks, y'all.
And I found this really interesting Dame Magazine article from October 2017 titled, Men Are Killing Thousands of Women a Year for Saying No. Very powerful headline there. And it included this statement, for every mass shooting on the national news, there are countless smaller gun-related murders the media overlooks perpetrated by angry men who can't bear rejection. So is rejection behind it all?
Ooh, that's a question. So that article, in addition to what Ryan was talking about with the Playboy article, shout out to Bruna, if you think about your identity as a man being based off of the oppression of women, and if you then get rejected, somehow you're losing a piece of your identity. Does that make sense? So if my identity as a man feels validated when I can either conquest a woman or I can somehow put a woman down.
It's like a checkmark system, like, oh, I'm winning.
Correct. And then if I'm not winning, then I'm losing. And so if I'm losing, then somehow I need to gain that back. And for a lot of men, there's the idea that, well, I can feel validated when I'm angry, mad, or violent.
So one thing I can control because I know I have the power in that way.
Exactly. And so I feel like I lost that power when I was turned down. So in Bruna's article, she's talking about sometimes it's not as easy as just saying no, no thank you, because there's a very real fear of losing your life.
Do you also think because it goes back to like some sort of biological thing that men have where it's like just aggression in general or conquering?
Potentially.
Or like way back, going back to, you know.
Those good old Bible days.
Yeah. I feel like survival of the fittest, in a way. Yeah, caveman. It's evolution. It's like caveman behavior.
I mean, I think, sure, there may be some underlying biological piece, but I also think it's more the psychosocial biological piece where men, there's this social construct that we're talking about. And to be a man, I need to enact my manhood by showing my domination over women. And when I can't do that, then somehow I'm less than a man. So like, how dare you have a negative impact on my manhood? Let me be violent against you.
Okay, and that's interesting because we were actually having a great conversation yesterday off air where we were talking about traditionalism and like men being traditional and them expecting women to be a certain way and to cook and to do all these things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is that quote unquote normal? Because I believe it's 2019. Ain't no woman just about to sit around the house cooking. Like, that's not realistic. But I know Shira brought up some points of saying like, well, I do believe some cis hetero men just like the idea of like, oh, if there's a woman cooking, blah, blah, blah.
I think, they feel, or it reminds, I was saying, reminds them of possibly their mom. And even though they would say, I want you to be independent, I love your passion, the fact that you're career oriented, it would be nice if you would do the, it's like a comfort that they fall back on.
But
sometimes.
Think about how we're talking about that, right? We're talking about, I want to be comforted, go cook for me.
Yeah.
We're not necessarily having.
So I ain't raising no man.
Yeah, we're not saying. We're not saying that, hey, you're my equal, you're my partner, you're my queen, you're my king. Mm. You're saying, hey, I want to feel like my need is being met, go cook for me. And if there's a discussion
what
about,
what if they're cooking for you too? But then you're like, they're like, come on, I it's nice. It would be nice. I'm turned on by a woman that cooks.
Well, for a lot of folks, that's a very real thing.
Yes,
and
that's what I'm talking about.
We could go to a restaurant where there is a female chef and be like, "Your food was prepared."
But it's necessary for couples to have that conversation ahead of time to be very clear, saying like, "Hey, this is what's helpful for me. This is my need. Is this okay for you?" And not just to assume like, "Hey, go make me a sandwich."
Well, yeah, of course, like that demanding thing. Let's go back to I guess what we were talking about in terms of violence, aggression against women. And in this article, it says violence against women is men's problem to solve, not women's.
That's right.
I agree. But in the end, it's a conversation. We need to work together. It takes two to tango or no?
Well, if you think about people in positions of power, there's not going to be this easy, oh, you know what? Let me just go ahead and give up this power because like that's the cool thing to do. So when I think I may have said something similar to that, being able to say, hey, I need to have this conversation with other men because men are the ones that are enacting and creating these problems, not women who are surviving them. So similarly, racism ain't black people's fault. As a black man, racism ain't my fault.
Right.
And I also recognize at the same time, while I'm oppressed in terms of my racial identity, I have privilege in terms of my gender identity, which makes it incumbent upon me to have conversations with other men to deconstruct that privilege and to support women.
But the only way that happens is through acknowledgement,
and
right?
Through acknowledgement,
you need to acknowledge.
Through acknowledgement, as well as having those difficult conversations to not feel like you're going to be losing something by gaining equality, but actually creating more of a space where we can all feel safe at the very, very least, feeling safe.
Yeah, and it also, I guess, feeling like, because I think a lot of times people feel like, oh, what do you want me to apologize for being a man or apologize for doing this? And I don't think
I've been around those conversations.
And my thing is, it's like, I don't think it needs to be that, but it's just the acknowledgement. Like,
seeing the other side.
Into that. Right. Walking, it's kind of like walking a mile in someone else's shoes.
Yeah. And feeling heard, feeling seen, and feeling validated goes a long, long way.
And to ask the last question, do you think that starts at parenting level, like raising children? Because I feel like that is what really shapes what we learn in by our environment.
I think it's parenting as well as school systems, where school systems automatically throw kids into gendered roles.
Yeah.
So we know, you know, from all the research, boys are somehow promoted to go into more of the mathematics, engineering, sciences.
Oh my God. I remember in high school, they made me take a weightlifting class. I got out immediately. I felt so uncomfortable. I was like, ew, are these weights? I'm sweating.
I
want to
see you in that outfit though.
Oh, it was the worst.
Dr. Myla Dotson, thanks again for joining us and dropping that knowledge. We are continuing to
Where can I find Dr. Myla?
Okay, yeah, sorry.
Oh my goodness.
Everyone, and I just moved on to absolutely.
You're the best.
Where can they find
no,
you?
No, that's all good. So my personal Twitter as well as Instagram is phdodson, P-H-D-O-D-S-O-N. And I have a podcast with the Queen of L.A. herself, Yessi Ortiz. Mm-hmm. And that podcast is called Mental Health is Real. And real is an acronym for reflecting empathy and love. So we're on Twitter and Instagram as well.
I'm telling you, best. Unicorn.
Yes. We are continuing our therapy session here.
Right.
Let's go there with Hear Me Out Tuesday. Sam Garanzini and Alapaki Yee join us after the break. We're talking about age differences in relationships. Does it work? Stay tuned for that convo after this.
Can I tell you something just between you and me? When I hear your voice, I know I'm finally free. Every single word is perfect as it can be. And I need you here with me.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan.
It's Hear Me Out Tuesdays with our favorite therapist, Sam Garanzini and Alapaki Yee from the Gay Couples Institute. Welcome back to the show.
Well, hello.
Hello.
Glad to be here.
Happy Tuesday. And now we are looking at a subject today that everyone can identify with, and that's why we love having you on. Age, maturity, differences, the age gap that might happen when you're dating someone. You know, some people are into older folks, some people are into younger folks.
Right.
And how does that impact the dynamic in the relationship?
Yeah, we really wanted to talk about some of the strategies that we repeatedly saw with the couples that are successful with this topic and there's just some common mistakes that we see others making that I think if they just knew the pathway to not make those mistakes, they'd do a lot better.
Okay, so first off, I guess, is it, quote unquote, and we hate to like say the normal or not normal, but is it normal or healthy to date someone with a huge age gap between you?
Well, I don't think, we saw so many couples that have large age differences, like over 20 years. And it was very healthy and just fine. And then we saw plenty of couples that had the same age and it was just fine. So the age difference, the what of the problem really wasn't the issue. It was kind of the how they went about it and how they let it affect them.
Okay, that makes sense. Because I think it's also societal. There's stigmas and so you tend to feel judged and then you bring it into your relationship.
Totally, right. So there's definitely societal pressures like that. But if we talk about the primary couple as itself, the big takeaway out of this is the age difference did not matter. Whether they got along or didn't get along was not necessarily because of their age.
Okay, well, that makes sense. Ryan, have you dated someone older or much younger? Or are you thinking about it?
No, I haven't actually. I think it's more so, do you think age and maturity have anything to do with anything? Like a person's maturity level and if they are younger, if they're more mature for their age? I feel like I hear that quite often. How do you think that plays?
Well, so let's talk about the couples that didn't handle this well. And so what was consistently what we would see is that they would let it get the best of them in how they dealt with one another. So there would be a lot of, you've already dealt with this. You're older than me. You've already dealt with this. And I need to have my time to go do yada yada, even though we're in a relationship. Or, you're so much younger than me. You will never understand what it's like to be my age. Well, eventually you will, but you don't understand what it's like to be my age going through this.
Yeah, but those are real things. How do you get through that? Because those are legitimate things to bring up, right?
So what you hear in the two situations I just posed is those people are automatically starting off as adversaries.
Mm.
And that's what you exactly want to avoid. If there were anything to write down from today, it would be that's what you want to avoid, starting off the conversation from that adversarial place, like you're too old, you're not mature enough, or you're too young, you don't understand me, and we're already butting heads. That doesn't put people in the place where they even want to learn what your perspective is. Yeah. And people just grind their heels in.
Totally. But I feel like those are red, like, flags or things that either because you're infatuated and you're going through that fantasy dream phase, you know, with each other, where you throw it under the rug, but ultimately it possibly comes up as the reality of the situation.
It can be. But I think what Sam is saying is, what is your perspective on it? So, you know, to Ryan's point, if I can get a little philosophical for a minute.
Go for it.
You can have someone who is young, who is an old soul, and then you can have someone that is older, that is a young soul. So what is your perspective on it? So in Sam's scenario, you can look at this as an adversarial thing. On the flip side of it, you can say, if you are that older person, to say, hey, there is something, if I'm going to date this younger person, there's something about him or her that is young and fresh and has a wonderful spirit that I can learn from. And for that younger person to say, this person who has gone through life, who has gone through all of this experience, I can also learn from him. And can we balance each other out where we learn from each other? That's what we saw that helped couples with a large age difference make it.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely had my fair share of age gap relationships. I actually dated someone that was the same age as my dad's girlfriend. My dad's girlfriend was younger than him. And then I dated someone the same age as his girlfriend. So we all had a double date once. It was awkward. No, it wasn't that awkward. But I found, you know, in the end, it did make a difference. But and then I'm never sure if it's because you come into it with that judgment or filter. So it's interesting to see couples that make it. I know also my grandfather married someone that was 20 years younger than him. And guess what? When he was older, and this sounds like really sad to say, like, she had to take care of him when she was still in the prime of her life as he was dying. I know, not to be a downer, but like, those are realities I feel like we don't think about.
And absolutely. And so it's a matter of perspective, right? That does the cost of being with this person outweigh the benefits, or does the benefits outweigh the cost? So if you're already going into it, wow, this is a big stigma, what are other people going to think? And you're not, and you don't necessarily think that, but you're really caving in on what you think other people think, then it's probably going to fail.
Yeah.
Because you're just too worried about what other people are feeling and thinking and pointing fingers at. And you're not living your own life and your own truth.
What about, I mean, friends and all that, I guess you could put aside. But what if it's like family members or even friends that you really care about, and then they're giving you, you know, their thoughts? That's hard to not to ignore that.
Right.
Boy, it definitely is. I'm thinking of a few situations where it's been an older person with a younger partner, and where they're feeling family pressure. People saying like, why are you with this younger guy? What is going on with this? And again, the success out of that is couples that champion their age difference, and they don't hide it, and they talk about it explicitly to one another, and then they show that this is actually a thing that makes the two of them better, and they both truly believe that. So yes, he might be a lot younger than me, but here's all the stuff that we get to do that makes our life just the vitality has gone way, way up.
Yeah, and that's a huge, huge point to make, and I want to overemphasize that. It's just like coming out, where at first your parents, your friends might not be okay with it, but they come around. They're looking to you on how to react. So if you as a couple with a large age difference, so a lot of our people that we've been talking to and commenting on this particular issue, it's like 10, 20, 30 years difference, all right? So
that's big.
If there's
30.
That large, yeah, well, we had a few that was 30 years difference, you know, and so like these are gay men with large age differences, but they make it work because they don't care. They don't care about the stigma, and they set how to make other people act on them or how they should react to them. So if you're okay with it, you're teaching other people that it's no big deal.
Well,
just like when you're gay.
Yeah. Well, we're going to continue this conversation. Hear Me Out Tuesdays with our therapist, Sam Garanzini and Alapaki Yee. We're talking age gaps in relationships, how to survive and thrive when you're in that situation. Stay tuned for that and more. You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
How do couples with large age differences make it? Well, we are here to help you today. We've got our therapist, Sam Garanzini and Alapaki Yee from the Gay Couples Institute. It's Hear Me Out Tuesdays. We have them on every week talking about different topics that impact all our lives. And so now let's just continue the conversation.
Yes. Okay, guys, this is like speaking from a personal moment, you know, how do I respond to a person that basically says that they wouldn't date someone my age, yet we're in the same maturity level?
Oh.
And they're older, by the way, because I'm 25, just to put that out there.
Of course.
But
I
just don't, and I guess I can give context. I also don't feel like I can date other people my age or around my age because I, career-wise and just maturity-wise, I feel like I tend to be on a different, more so level, especially with the way I've grown up and all that stuff, too, as well.
You're an old soul.
Yeah. A lot of people think I'm a lot older than I am. So it's like, how do I balance that?
So I think that's a cool question. That comes up a lot. And so do you see how with what we talked about earlier, that person, that situation is already failing the first test, which is, are we making this an issue that immediately sets us up as adversaries? That is by itself, I would think that's a red flag, particularly if they do it first off the bat. That's communicating. When you just asked me that, I'm going to tell you something that I've learned from personally and seeing a lot of people in therapy over many years is how people are in the beginning, how they are in the middle, how they are in the end. Mm. And so if somebody starts off from that place, they're probably going to be like that all through the middle, and then they're probably going to finish there too. And so if that kind of thing would come up, I would just kind of punt on that one and go on to the next.
Okay.
All right, so that guy's not in the picture anymore.
To the left.
No, but I feel that totally makes sense because those arguments that are brought up, even if it's in a casual way, people use that against you when stuff hits the fan, you know?
Right, and like you were saying earlier, if your parents are against it, if your friends have issue with it, that's one thing. If the person you're trying to date also has an issue with it and they don't know and they're unsure and it's like, what about the stigma? That's already an uphill battle, along with everything that's just the normal stuff of just dating. Getting to know them, are we compatible? Never mind just the age gap that you're throwing on top of it, that one or both people in the relationship is making that a big deal.
Okay, so but what is the balance between it being a healthy, like, okay, great, you like someone, you have a connection, but if there's consistent behavior of dating younger, and I think specifically men deal with this, where it's like if they're always dating the young woman, like they get a lot of crap from people, and the balance of they're in therapy of saying, like, is this an issue? Do I have something to heal? Or like, why aren't I dating someone my own age? How do you deal with that conversation as a therapist?
I think it really comes down to, is that relationship with that particular person, is that making that person better, or is it holding them back, or are they kind of like just playing out some kind of drama or something from their shadow side, where they're just kind of like projecting some needs on this person, expecting them to fulfill it, or do they... Like back to what you said earlier, Ryan, is this what you would want to hear off the bat from an older person is, hey, I'm older. I'm looking for somebody younger, but somebody who's mature, somebody who we both can have fun together, somebody who can kind of, you know, keep me excited about new things and keep challenging me, but also can have conversations with me about the things that I have seen too. That would be kind of like the North Star of where you would want to probably be going. This repetitive kind of thing where they're just kind of shopping around for the latest young person, that kind of thing, you'll start to see patterns in the people that they date, and those are short-lived relationships because they're not spending the time to find a quality person. They're not going into it really with a plan. Like, I'm looking for someone who really brings something to the table for both of us.
So I guess, how do successful couples, balance even different drives when it comes to, social or even sexual drives?
So I was hoping this would come up. This kind of thing is one of the more common things that we have seen as far as sexual drives and age differences, because it's just normal biology, et cetera. And again, the same rule applies. So couples that let the age difference and the drive difference get the best of them, then they have the worst time with this topic. People who say, you should kind of be growing up sexually. Like, are you serious? You want to do that? Like, I've already had those days. There's nothing there. You shouldn't want to do that. That's your yellow or red flag scenario.
Yellow flag. Yeah, I mean, any shaming of any sort and whatever age, I feel like I've dealt with guys that are younger that have less of a sex drive than I do. They should be in their prime.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, and if I can just say before we end here, really, one big takeaway out of this is, and this comes from Paul, one of our fans from the Gay Couples Institute that commented on this, that you must be open to what the other person has to offer and what you can offer to them.
That's
really what this all comes down to, and I thought that was really well said that I wanted to share.
Yeah, and I just think as we wrap it up that people sometimes end up being honest about what they want, but then they're not ready to give that, or they're if a young person wants to have a child and the older person,
right?
I'm talking about kind of maybe the cis hetero, actually not, the older person doesn't. They've already decided. I think there needs to be something about letting that person go and not holding them, because it's you are infatuated or quote unquote in love. You got to let the journeys continue. So what is coming up next week, you guys?
What is coming up next week is, what's our...
Oh, have we not planned this?
I mean, this is live
next
radio.
Next Turn Me Out Tuesdays.
It's live radio.
I guess we'll let people know soon.
Oh my gosh. This one I actually can't wait for. I'm glad I looked it up to make sure. So privacy, phones, trust.
Ooh.
Should you let your partner just investigate the hell out of you? What are you doing on your phone? Who are you chatting with? Show me your phone right now. What numbers did you call? I noticed you got this email. Should I have your password?
Yikes.
That's what we're talking about.
Okay, well, that is coming up next week. We do this every Tuesday. Hear Me Out Tuesdays. Thank you again, Sam Garanzini and Alapaki Yee.
Absolutely. Such a pleasure. That was fun.
Yeah, have a great night. Now, coming up, we have got What's Trending in the News top of the hour and also our cue of the day.
Mm-hmm.
As you get older, speaking of age, are you having a harder time making friends? We want to hear from you. Give us a call right now. 833-77-CALL-Q. 833-772-2557. We'll be back with your responses after this.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan.
All right, so do you want to win a trip to New York City to celebrate Pride Weekend, June 27th through the 30th? Well, Channel Q and Shop for Great Food and Pomegranate will send you and a friend to one of the biggest Pride parties in the world. We'll provide you with round-trip airfare, a four-night hotel stay. All you got to do is head over to wearechannelq.com for your chance to win. Of course, keep listening to the new Channel Q for all the details.
Yes. Now, here's what's trending in the news. Top of the hour, Donald Trump Jr. and the Senate Intelligence Committee have reached a deal for the president's eldest son to appear before the committee before closed doors in mid-June. So this is what sources are telling CNN. The agreement for Trump Jr.'s testimony comes after the committee issued a subpoena last month that sparked You know, and we saw this an intense blowback against Republican Chairman Richard Burr of North Carolina from Trump Jr.'s allies and many of Burr's Republican colleagues. The interview, though, will be limited to 2 to 4 hours and limited in scope to 5 to 6 topics. But questions about the June 2016 Trump Tower meeting and the Trump Tower Moscow project will not be off limits. So that's where the juicy stuff might come in. And two sources familiar with the matter told this to CNN.
I mean, 5 to 6 topics don't really seem like a lot.
Yeah, so they'll have to be pick and choose though.
Yeah.
It reminds me of like a dating thing. You're like, okay, speed dating.
Yeah.
5 or 6 topics.
You only have 30 seconds on
right.
the clock.
Exactly. Now, the new season of the PBS Kids cartoon Arthur includes a milestone in children's programming with the wedding of a longtime character to his same-sex partner.
Can't believe Arthur is still a thing.
Yeah, right? Nigel Ratburn, the teacher of eternally 8-year-old Arthur, was revealed to be gay in an episode entitled Mr. Ratburn and the Special Someone. And with this wedding, Ratburn officially enters, a group of gay teachers on family shows alongside such greats as Mr. Simmons on Hey Arnold and Sheldon Beast on Glee. Is it Mr. Simmons? Yeah.
Who's Sheldon?
Sheldon on Glee?
Yeah, I don't remember that character.
All right, well, time to go back and binge watch Glee.
Yeah.
Entertainment Weekly notes the children's show in the past tackled many issues from autism to cancer, but this is the first time a character has been revealed to be LGBTQ, and the character has been on the show since it debuted 22 years ago. Wow. I wonder if the same people are employed by the show, too. Congratulations.
I mean, right. They're like Ellen Pompeo status. Like, that's like Grey's Anatomy, season 45.
Now, last week, Democrats in the Texas House of Representatives were able to stop a bill that would have made it easier for individuals and businesses to discriminate against queer people under the guise of protecting freedom of religion. The bill became known as the Save Chick-fil-A Bill after the city of San Antonio wouldn't allow the fast food retailer from opening up a store at the local airport because of the business's legacy of anti-LGBTQ behavior. Now, though the House killed the bill, the state Senate revived a companion version of the bill, another loophole they found, that will now head to the full Senate today.
Oh, God.
Yeah, and that was what's trending in the news top of the hour right here on Let's Go There. And now we are getting into our cue of the day, our question of the day. As you get older, are you having a harder time making friends? We want to hear from you. Give us a call right now. 833-77-CALL-Q. 833-772-2557. Now,
what?
I mean, I know you're not aged yet, but like even at your medium young age, are you having a hard time?
Yeah, I think it is difficult. I think coming out of school where everyone is so confined to campgrounds, quote unquote, if you want to say that, like a campus ground.
Oh, yeah.
Where you can meet people and you can be in different things. But when you're adulting, you have a lot more to worry about, like paying bills and being an adult. So there's really no time to focus on making friends. I think it can be hard. I think it's easy to make acquaintances. But
yeah, like
friends.
Deep friendships. Yeah, because we're spending most of our time at work these days. And then it's like that balance where a lot of people are becoming friends with their colleagues. But I mean, you need to have an outside circle. It's like it's hard just to be friends with just your colleagues.
Yeah,
I
think that's why friendships, like ones that if you are lucky enough to have a friendship out of college that is like very strong, I think that's why a lot of times there can be a dependency on that when you're into the real world, because that's all you know.
And if you're lucky to live in the same city as them, a lot of times people, when you had a friend from college, you live in different parts of the country.
Right. And so, I think it can just be easier.
And it's not just hard to make friends. I would say as you get older, a lot of people think it's hard to date as well. Because once again, socializing less, at work more, you don't have ways to go to bar. That's a whole other subject. But I just feel like it's similar in terms of how you meet people and quality people in the right settings.
I don't know. I think it's different when it comes to like dating or hooking up with someone, because at least you know what that person's for. When it's a friendship thing, you have to you have to have a trust with that person and knowing that, this is my ride or die, that they'll be like, I don't know.
Ride or dies don't happen overnight. Let me tell you, we all think you'll meet someone and you're like,
don't think a ride or die happens overnight.
Well, a lot of times we'll meet someone and we've done this, like, I feel like I've known you forever, like in another life, right?
Yeah,
and you definitely have that immediate immediate connection. But let's be honest, that type of friendship, the ride or die friendship, it's time. It's being getting through situations and building that trust, just like any relationship. Well, according to a poll, one poll in Evite surveyed 2,000 Americans and found that 45% of adults struggle to make new friends, with 42 of them blaming their struggles on shyness or introversion. Now, the study also found that for many adults, popularity hits its peak at age 23. For 36%, it peaks even before age 21. So you have a lot of adults that say, yo, I was popular way back when. Now, I'm a bit of a loner.
I mean, it's one of those things. Remember when Apple released, like, oh, well, you can have a FaceTime up to, like, 45 people? Imagine Apple thinking, I actually know 45 people. And wanting to FaceTime with them. It's different. That's what I'm saying. That's a different, and I think there has to be a clear distinction of acquaintance and a friend.
And who says you want to have all these friends?
There's people that I would invite into my wedding, but not people I would ask as my bride, like as my groomsmen or my bridesmaids.
Well, yeah, of course.
So it's like, if there's there's a difference.
I hope I'm one of your bridesmaids.
I'm still thinking about it.
Okay. Good to know. I'll work harder. Okay. Well, coming up, we're going to let you in on an app that actually is helping women become friends with each other. And so this is an app you probably don't know about it. We have the founder on after this. You're listening to Let's Go There with Sharon Ryan on the new channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
As you get older, are you having a harder time making friends? It seems like something that everyone goes through.
It's rough.
Yeah, I mean, but we were having a conversation about this even during the break, and I don't like being ageist or anything, but I could only speak for myself, my journey, that when you're younger, like, you have your friends from college. I actually was meeting a lot of people. I had a lot of acquaintances, and you're meeting a lot of people. Doesn't mean they're like best friends, right? And I guess maybe personally, I didn't have a hard time making friends because I always threw myself in situations and I'm outgoing and all that. But then as I get older, I find I'm actually making really interesting friends that are not just work related, because that's where the superficial friendships happen,
right?
Where you're like, what can you do for me, right? Like, yeah. As you're coming up in your career, everyone's very career oriented, goal oriented, and that's where you find you're like, oh, I thought I was close to that person, but I couldn't rely on them. As you get older, you start getting into more hobbies, getting back into things you love doing, and it's not just about doing, it's being. And so you meet people that like might like pottery or golf or tennis, and those are things you start
pottery
thinking
about. Was the first thing you thought about?
I don't know.
Well, it's funny because that is our question of the day, and we actually have someone, DeMarcus, is on the line. What are your thoughts?
Girl, you and I both know that it is hard to make friends as an adult.
Yeah, why?
Because why? Why? Because we're so aware of everything now. Hmm. As a kid, you know, you are a little bit more naive to the fact of making friends and making actual friends. But as an adult, it's a little bit more hard because you need friendship a partnership when you get older.
Interesting.
So it's like a friendship partnership. So you treat it a little bit different.
Yeah.
And it's harder because you can't trust a lot of people when you get older.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, you have more of a filter. I mean, I think as you get older, you have less tolerance for having bad people in your life or flaky or superficial people.
Exactly. And then you realize that you really never had that many friends to begin with.
Hey, less is more, right? Quality over quantity.
Well, thank you, DeMarcus, so much for calling. You're amazing.
That's so interesting because, yeah, you can meet a lot of people, but also as you get older, guess what? You get busier. People have kids, this, that. It's hard to balance everything. So, you, like, even the friends that I've known for years, I probably see maybe once a month once every few months if I'm lucky.
Yeah.
Let alone new people that come into my life. So, actually, there is an app called Vina that is making it easier for people to build friendships. And
specifically women, though.
Specifically women, yes.
Which I'm going to ask her, why just women?
Okay, well, we got the founder and CEO on the line right now, Olivia June. Welcome to the show.
Hey there, thanks for having me.
Yes.
Hi, Olivia.
So first off, tell people what Vina is all about.
So Vina is a social discovery app that's free on the App Store and the Google Play Store. And it helps you discover the community of people around you and who might have similar things in common with you, because we can't walk around and judge everyone by what they look like on the outside, especially as adults where we have such varied interests. and we're looking for people who are really going to connect with who we are and where we're headed, and who also is looking for that partnership, that good friendship.
So how does that work? Because I'm thinking it's like a Tinder where you have your bio and you have, oh my God, this is what I like, this is how I hang out. But I feel like that can be a little weird when it comes to friendships.
So it's similar to Tinder in the fact that, you know, you see people who are similar to you, you set up your filters on age and distance, etc. But we do a lot more personality, so it's way less photo-based. So you have a much smaller profile photo, you do personality quizzes, and you fill out fun personality questions, and then there's some events baked in. So you can throw out to the community, hey, I want to go to brunch, you know, this weekend, or I want to check out this concert, or, you know, who else wants to take this workout class, things like that.
Well, the awesome thing about it is, like, obviously women in 158 countries around the world have met their best friends, travel partners, and roommates.
Bridesmaids.
Bridesmaids. So what was, I guess, why was there such a need that you felt like, you know, this culture and this world needed this?
You know, we've built a lot of technology at this point that really focuses on helping us build our digital communities. But what that left us feeling really unsatiated. You know, we sit there and we scroll through Instagram or Facebook and you're liking things and commenting, but ultimately that's not really feeding our real need of having those close friendships, someone to hug, someone to show up and talk about life with and go through the hard and real stuff with you and go out and have fun. And so we really needed a tool for just discovering who else is around us. And, you know, we've had decades of dating apps, but, you know, we only really need to date one person or maybe a couple people at a time, depending on what you're looking for.
Yeah.
And, you know, at a certain point, you really just want to continue building those friendships and those connections, whether they're professional or they're hobby oriented, or you're just going through a big change in life. Maybe you just aren't clicking with your friends that you used to have. And it's really important for us to have a wide network. A recent study came out showing that people with a lot of loose ties are actually a lot happier.
Loose ties? What do you mean? Loose ties?
Loose ties being like acquaintances or people you've gone to coffee with once or twice.
And they're happier?
Not your best friends. They're happier because when you're looking for a job or you need a referral for something, you have more people to go to and get references, and you have a network of people who might introduce you to your next roommate or, you know, the next person you date or your next work opportunity.
That's interesting because you don't need to have, I mean, we all should have deep, deep friendships. We all deserve that. But it's saying, like, don't judge your friendships too much and, like, be hard on yourself for having these ride or dies. Sometimes it's just about having some, like, really good people in your life just to accompany you and friends for maybe, whether it be a glass of wine or something else, right? To keep you going.
You need both.
Yeah.
You really need both.
And tell people, Vina started also because you were moving around and you were in a new city and couldn't meet anyone. And why would you not go on like a Facebook?
Well, Facebook is really designed around inventorying the people that you already know, and which is great and whatnot. But I mean, I think most people aren't really using Facebook as much anymore these days anyway. And so I really wanted a way to discover people that I didn't know, especially when moving to a new city when you don't know anyone. So I had moved to San Francisco, and it was 2009, so it was pre-dating app era, and I was looking on OkCupid because at least I was like, I need to go on some dates and get out of the house or do something. But then I started seeing the women who they would say are similar to you. They'd show you, like, your competition.
They do?
I'd read these girls' profiles. Yeah, totally different from what we're used to today, right?
Yeah.
I've never been on that, so I didn't even know.
That's wild.
Anyway. So
do you think Vina is ever going to expand to other genders or maybe like not even a gender, but allow more people to connect?
Yeah. So we are open to anyone that doesn't gender identify as male. So basically anyone, whatever gender you identify as long as you're not gender identifying as male. And we do this because, one, men and women historically, and, you know, looking at social psychology, tend to make friends really differently. So men tend to build relationships through doing activities, and women tend to build relationships through personality and storytelling and a little more like immediate intimacy building. And so these are some of the habits that go into their thought process in building the app for it. And as we expand, we really wanted to let women lead the way and show, you know, it's not scary. It's not, you know, it's not a secret dating app. It's a place where people are genuinely showing up for platonic friendship. Well, and so once you kind of put mixed genders on, it can, biology can take over and people can, maybe it accidentally turns into a dating app because everything does.
I was thinking about just adding gay men.
Oh.
Don't women love gay men?
Yeah. You must be included.
No, I mean, I can make friends by myself.
It's true.
Yeah, but I think it's really important. This is not just a women's issue. This is in everyone right now.
Yeah.
In, you know, 2019. We all need this.
Yeah, Olivia June, again, thank you so much for joining us. She is the founder and CEO of Vena. To check it out, it's a app for women friendships. Just go to HeyVena, VINA.com. Have a great night.
Thank you.
Bye.
And now we are going to your social responses for our cue of the day. After this, as you get older, are you having a harder time making friends? A lot of people have responded, and we'll be reading those social media responses in a moment. You're listening.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
We've got Dr. Chris Donahue from Loveline joining us as we go to your social media responses for our cue of the day. Welcome back in the studio.
What's going on?
You know, we're getting into it. Our question is, as you get older, are you having a harder time making friends? And it seems like that's a thing. You know, there's been a lot of studies that have shown that people are having a hard time. And we're trying to figure out why and what we can do about it.
Yeah.
So let's go to social media at We Are Channel Q. You guys, we asked and you guys answered. We love that. Paul says, the love you make is equal to the love you take. Age isn't relevant, only who you love. Thanks for that fortune cookie, but did it answer the question? Vincent said, the truth, if it is something complicated to make friends who are really loyal. Someone said, as I got older, many got married or moved away, just too busy to hang, but in bars, not too busy to hit on girls, though a couple were married. I hate cheaters for friends. Oh, Joe, drag.
Getting real.
Drag your friends.
You thought it was a subtle, simple question.
I did too. Slade said something interesting. Not so much that it's harder rather than the opportunities are fewer.
Yes. Right?
Well, the thing is, what the normal trajectory is that later life is called second phase of life issues, right? Where the first part of your life is usually about fitting in and making friends. And the second phase is usually about actually not fitting in and being more authentic and focusing on what you're providing in the world.
What does a second phase start at? Like, when does that start?
Traditionally,
in your life?
Usually in my office, I see it. You hope to see it. Let me put it like that. You hope to see it. Some people will spend their entire lives focused on first phase of life issues like, I just want to fit in and look like everyone else and think like everyone else and check all the boxes. And that's actually psychologically pretty immature. And so you hope that around mid-30s to 40s, they start thinking, am I living my true meaning? Am I finding value in the life I've created? And people call it like a midlife crisis, but hopefully, no, it's a midlife moment of like truth where you realize I want to spend the rest of my time here doing things that are meaningful and powerful and honest.
Isn't that a quarter life crisis, you could say, at this point?
Sure.
Because
if we're living
to like in our 90s,
but
you
those
know?
Are usually solo journeys. And so I expect people to pull away from friends because those things are usually more contemplative. It is usually more relational where you're focusing on your time on marriage or a primary relationship. And so I guess I tell people, don't panic. It's okay.
Bita says on social media, says, yes, if in my experience, people are not interested in genuine friendships when they are older, maybe because it takes too much time and effort. What are our thoughts?
They're not. I think people want genuine friendships. It's just that we don't give ourselves enough time because if we aren't focused in that way of being and on our spiritual journey, we are still focused on the grind of life. A lot of people are in survival mode.
I do think it can be hard, though. I think it's hard to figure out, like, I don't know, to be in the spaces that you want to be in and then people that also align with kind of what you're thinking, your thought process and how you're living your life and understanding. Like, I think now I'm kind of in a point in my space and my time kind of in career as well that I am very career focused, but I'm also wanting to be surrounded by people that are also genuinely, you know, career focused. And then we come together and then we have this moment where we're like, oh, we're all doing great things, but we don't need to be with each other every 5 seconds. I think that's where I'm at in my phase where it's like, I want to have the opportunity to catch up with people and like, like have a moment where we're like going to brunch and we're like catching up on everything.
Deeper intimacy.
Yeah, deeper intimacy.
And deeper intimacy can't be achieved when you have a squad. You can't be running around with 12 friends all the time and think you're going to have depth of all of them. So usually as you get older, you want deeper intimacy. And so it's more one-on-one based things and less friends, but it's deeper and more value with the time you have with them.
Yeah, I don't get people that go in like groups where it's like, yo, I'm going to, can you put 10 people on the list with me?
I'm like, I just don't get that either. That's why I don't understand when, especially when you see it out here, that you people have to survive. And I think it's a very Hollywood, like LA thing where people have to survive with like tons of people out. Like,
it's always a red flag for me with dating. Yeah. If someone is always like running off the squad, for me it's a red flag that they're not open to a lot of deep intimacy and we're not going to be compatible in that way. Because I want to sit and do one-on-one things and talk about like our dreams and our goals and really be transformed and get honest and you can. Yeah. And so for me, that's a personal red flag socially and for dating.
Or the best when a friend goes, who else is going to be there? I'm like,
that hurts. That's like, ow.
I'm like, are we in high
school? Not enough.
But I do think, and I don't know if you want to, I know we're going to Yes Queen next, but I don't, I would love to know your thoughts about friendships that have like you, that has been your core friend, like your best friend for a very, very long time.
It's beautiful.
And then, but there may be a codependency of us not being able to find our own social groups with outside of just us. So I wonder how to navigate that, and maybe we can talk about that.
And then dating sometimes, right? Because some people have such a core friendship that there's no space for a boyfriend or girlfriend.
So
let's get to that after this. And of course, our Yaz Queen of the Day. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
Well, we are back with our question of the day, and Dr. Chris Donahue from Loveline, which comes on right after our show. Mm-hmm. Now, our question of the day is, do you find it difficult as you get older to make new friends? And before the break, I kind of posed a question to everyone here about, you know, you can be friends with someone for a very long time that's kind of been your ride or die. But how do you navigate finding friends outside of that relationship and kind of growing as individual people while keeping that you know, original friendship strong?
Yeah, it's hiding sometimes. And I you know, I can reflect back on, I had my own experience with that, where I had this best friend, Angelo, and we would jokingly say that we have all of our needs met. We weren't sexual, but like there was no room for anyone to date us or to hang out with us. Yeah. We had like our secret language. Yeah. And when we were out, we were not approachable because we're laughing, doing our thing. Yeah. And the world just shrunk down. And so I think it's really just about a consciousness that limits you. And that if that friend moves, which he did, you then are left friendless, or if they do get in a relationship. Yeah. And so just the awareness that, see them a lot, stay close, but also sprinkle in some other people with you, see other friends without them.
And also, there's like the guilt of kind of like leaving them behind in some way. And I think you don't ever want that, especially if that person is very, someone you love and you want, that's going to be your person all the time. But I do think that is something that I even kind of struggle with, of like knowing like, oh, I'm hanging out with my friends here, but also I want to include them if I can, but how do I deal with that?
Because you can't always.
Not everyone can always do that.
When I've magically brought some different people together, the assumption is I'm the common denominator, so of course we'll all get along. And like, they didn't not get along, but they didn't have anything in common other than
me. But how much of that responsibility is yours?
I take a lot of it, but again, because for me that consciousness is really important, so that's what I would just say to people. Just like if you're struggling to make friends, just make sure you're not using a friend as a crutch.
Oh, that's good. And just have honest communication. I love you. You are my ride or die. We are gonna change. Expand our friend groups, and I'll always include you when I can. If I can't, don't think it's because I'm trying to go out of my way intentionally to not include you. It just might not be a fit, and you're awesome.
And I think the thing is, especially if you're clear in your friendship, that person probably doesn't even think that way, because they're, obviously that they know what's real to you, especially out here.
Uh-huh.
But my thing is, I think it still can be an uncomfortable conversation to kind of navigate through, because
also
it's
in dating, where some people have a dating style where they only see the person they're dating, and then when they want to go to a friend's night, that person's offended.
It's
awkward. Like, oh, you're leaving me home Friday night? And it's like, I want to go see my friends. I miss them. It's been weeks.
Yeah.
And so I think it's important to start it that way from the beginning, whether it's a friendship or romantic thing. From the beginning, allow space. Force space.
All right. Well, thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
Excited for Loveline with Danny Trejo after
this. That's right. We got Danny Trejo. Machete.
It's going to be amazing. Now as we wrap up.
Spy Kids.
Yes, that too. And he does donuts and tacos. I'm getting hungry. Now, as we wrap things up, let's just honor our Yaz Queen of the Day.
Yaz Queen.
This one goes out to someone we love, a star of Pose, who continues to, push down boundaries and, you know, break ground. India Moore has been tapped as a face of Calvin Klein's Pride Capsule collection, launching today. She has amazing pictures on her Instagram. Definitely check out India Moore. And she's been tapped as the face of the brand's collection, which is amazing. The campaign also stars Adrian Sotiris, Liam Daniels, and Roseanne Berdouin. And they've confirmed that they're going to be donating the proceeds to the Human Rights Campaign Foundation as a component of the campaign, but declined to reveal how much they would be donating. Which is interesting.
I mean, that is interesting, but I know if India signed on
to
do it, she made sure to align herself with people that are doing it right.
So we want to give a shout out.
Trust in her.
Yeah, exactly. We want to give a shout out, Yas Queen, to India Moore, as always.
Yes, Queen.
And Calvin Klein, who's doing some really cool stuff.
It is. It's really nice, actually. I really like it.
It's hot. I want to go and buy me some Calvins right now. Okay, that does it for our show today.
I want to go buy some underwear.
You know what? I posted a Calvin Klein out. You saw that was my new year, a new look. I posted like me and Calvin.
Not only did I see, but I also edited it.
That you get credit.
Yes.
And let me tell you, that got a lot of likes.
I know.
So I will put on those Calvins again. I need that engagement. Okay, that does it for our show today. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, 4 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on Channel Q. We'll be talking about, you know, what would you do if you saw your friend's partner on a dating app? We're getting to that scandalous issue tomorrow. Also, the new Snapchat filter that transforms men into women, women into men. A lot of you are using it. But is it problematic?
I have thoughts, but it's fun, and I'm a beautiful woman.
You are. You are hot. You are hot. That is true. That's coming up on tomorrow's show. Now we are sending you love and light.
And honey, remember to slay.
See you tomorrow.
Bye. Bye.